Now, time for us to catch up on stories making headlines around the world on this week's World Report with Justin McCarthy.
Good morning. On today's programme, the theft of donkeys in Kenya and the side of Dubai you won't see in the glossy brochures. But first we go to Canada, where after more than 40 years in captivity, the country's last living captive killer whale has died at an amusement park and zoo in Niagara Falls, Ontario. Kiska has recently also been described as the loneliest orca in captivity, having lived without a tank mate for the past 10 years. Following the death, a national animal rights group renewed its call for marine land to be investigated and prosecuted. More from Dan Karpinchuk in Toronto.
Kiska, the killer whale, was taken as a baby near Iceland in 1979 and sold into the aquarium industry. It's believed she was 47 years old when she died. During her lifetime, she had five calves, all of whom died young. When she was captured, she was taken alongside Keiko, another orca that became famous in the movie Free Willy. The pair lived together in a tank at Marineland for a few years in the 1980s. But Keiko, which means lucky one in Japanese, was found in poor health in a Mexico City aquarium, and plans were made to reintroduce him to the wild with a pod of killer whales. He was flown to Iceland and taught to catch live fish in an operation that cost about $500,000. When he was released in 2002, Keiko immediately began swimming towards Norway, an 870-mile trek, and apparently in search of human companions. He emerged near the Norwegian village of Halsa, where he became a local attraction and allowed fans to pet and play with him. At one point, animal protection officials imposed a ban on people approaching him. In 2003, officials said Keiko died after a sudden onset of pneumonia. Handlers never could coax him back to the open sea. Keiko starred in three Free Willy movies and raised public awareness about orcas that eventually led sympathetic humans to help set him free. As for Kiska, she became a popular tourist attraction at Marineland, the amusement park and zoo in Niagara Falls, Ontario. But animal rights activists have long voiced their concerns about Kiska and her captivity at Marineland. In a video taken by a former trainer at the aquarium, Kiska is seen floating listlessly and moving slowly. Officials at Marineland had refused to comment. In a statement, Ontario's Ministry of the Solicitor General confirmed on March the 10th that Kiska died at Marineland on March the 9th. The statement added that Animal Welfare Services was on side to determine compliance with the standards of care, including the requirement to perform a post-mortem. The ministry would not comment further because of its ongoing inspections of the amusement park. Marineland would also not comment. A spokesman for the ministry, Brent Ross, says Marineland has been inspected 160 times over the past 3 years as part of the work to ensure that standards of care were met under the PAWS Act, an Ontario law aimed at ensuring that all animals are protected and treated in a humane manner. But animal rights groups issued a statement renewing their calls for charges to be laid against Marineland over its treatment of Kiska. In a statement, the advocacy group, Animal Justice, said Kiska was widely known as the loneliest orca in the world. After having lived for more than 40 years in a tank at Marineland, and with more than a decade of that in solitary confinement. Advocates say orcas are incredibly social animals, but Kiska lived alone since 2011. They insist that she suffered from agonizing loneliness as well as the lack of space and mental stimulation. Animal Justice says it is heartbroken over the news of her death. Also mourning was World Animal Protection Canada, which alleges that through its investigations, Marineland appears to be continuing to engage in a programming that exploits the animals that it continues to own, including dolphins. But the group says the amusement park continues to escape accountability because of weak animal enforcement. It says that's resulted in a culture of non-compliance of the few regulations that exist in Ontario. Animal Protection Canada says it hopes that efforts can now be redoubled to ensure that no more innocent animals die in Canada. The executive director of Animal Justice, Camille Labchuk, says her organization is demanding justice for what Kiska endured at the hands of the park. She also wants provincial authorities to make public the results of the post-mortem and to prosecute Marineland for what it calls the unlawful distress the orca experienced throughout her final years. Animal Justice had filed a legal complaint in 2021 over Marineland's treatment of Kiska. It accused the park of breaking the law by not meeting the whale's physical and mental needs. That same year, Marineland was charged after the group filed another complaint that dolphins were being forced to perform for entertainment despite a national ban. Those charges were stayed in December of last year. Another organization, the Whale Sanctuary Project, says the death of Kiska illustrates the need for a safe harbor in Nova Scotia for other captive aquatic animals. Activists say they're heartbroken to know that Kiska will never have the chance to be relocated to a whale sanctuary and experience the freedom she deserved. The Whale Sanctuary Project president, Lori Marino, says the loss of Kiska will intensify the urgency to help Marineland relocate some 34 beluga whales and 5 dolphins who remain at the park. Some take comfort that thanks to federal legislation, Kiska will be the last orca to ever be in captivity in Canada. In 2019, the Canadian government outlawed the importing and keeping of orcas in captivity. For World Report, I'm Dan Karpinchuk in Toronto.
Well, from a story about whales in Canada to one about donkeys in Kenya, where, since the first donkey slaughterhouse opened in the country in 2016, the number of donkeys has decreased dramatically. This is due to the demand for donkey skin in the Chinese market, which is used to make cosmetics and beauty products known as ijiao. However, the situation has also led to donkey theft in the villages, which traditionally rely on the animals for their livelihood. From Western Kenya, Victor Muturi reports.
At Kanju village on the outskirts of Naivasha town in Nakuru County, Kenya, Bernard Irungu is attending to his 2 remaining donkeys. The Princess of Donkeys abattoirs has increased the demand of donkeys, leading to donkey theft. Irungu says between the year 2016 and 2021, he has lost 6 donkeys in unclear circumstances. One morning, 2 donkeys I used to work with went missing. A month later, I bought 2 more donkeys, and after a year, they also disappeared. I stayed for a while and bought another donkeys for the 3rd time. I stayed with them again for a year. These ones disappeared completely. I even did not find their remains. So you can see all this time, my work was buying donkeys from my savings. We have even slept outside to offer protection to our donkeys, says Irungu. According to Irungu, most communities depend on donkeys to conduct their daily activities such as water transport for home use and for sale. But for the past 4 years, there has been high rate of donkey theft in Naivasha and its environs. Irungu had to close down this business for a while until he bought the current donkeys last year. At Mirera village, a few kilometers from Irungu's place, Joseph Ndendu is a worried man. He has lost 8 donkeys in 3 years. Dendu says he's not been able to start his transport business because he no longer has his donkeys. He is planning to buy other donkeys because he has a passion of taking care of donkeys and cannot live without them. In the past, when donkeys were stolen, if you went around various places, you could find them loitering around streets and villages. But since the introduction of abattoirs, even if you walk around, you will not find the donkeys alive. Personally, I have lost 8 donkeys in total. I remember losing 6 of them in one day, and that brought me down completely, says Dendu. Locals say that since the donkey skin trade started 4 years ago, the donkey population has plummeted not only in and around Naivasha, but also regionally, adding that some of the donkeys were found alive at the abattoir yards and that business merchants and cartels are the main suspect of illegal donkeys transport and theft. The Chinese traders who came earlier told us their aim was to take injured donkeys and the old ones, but later on, that did not happen. It is also not easy to find injured donkeys all the time, and it can take a long time to find old donkeys, so that business could not happen as they projected. And now they are starting buying any donkey, including the younger ones. John Maina, who is one of the locals, says, these communities have expressed concern about their presence and future survival, considering that the slaughterhouses have increased the demand for the commercial consumption of donkeys. According to Rafael Ngome, the supervisor of Kenya Society for Protection of Animals here at Naivasha Sub-County, donkeys are quickly becoming target animals for large-scale harvesting, primarily for their skins. He says donkey skin-based products are in high demand in the Chinese market, which is used to make cosmetics, that is, beauty products, and a Chinese product called a jiao, which is believed to be anti-aged product, adding that donkey bones are rich in calcium content, and if it's processed, it can be a source of calcium to other animals. That's why donkeys have been the most targeted animals recently. Last year, Kenya's Agriculture Cabinet Secretary closed down the operation of all abattoirs after the outcry from communities and animal welfare organizations, but there are rumors that some could be operating secretly. Our efforts to speak to abattoir operators were futile. For World Report, this is Victor Muturi reporting from Rift Valley, Kenya.
Finally, we go to Dubai, a city marketed for its luxury shopping and lively entertainment scene. But the gloss masks a city where workers have limited rights, public expressions of affection are not allowed, and the LGBTQ community has almost no rights at all. From Dubai, Gareth Mason reports.
Swooping down towards Dubai's Palatial International Airport, the skyline is nothing but impressive. Standing proudly above the scores of gleaming skyscrapers is the Burj Khalifa, hard to miss at 828 metres, the world's tallest and over twice the height of the Empire State Building. I was only staying 3 days, but that's fine with an emirate looking to future-proof its economy with tourist money beyond the gold and oil booms of the 1960s. Dubai Airport is a gateway to the east, and if it can't tempt you to a five-star holiday, it's happy to distract those passing through with a dash of manicured luxury. Tourists and expats make up a clearly delineated middle class whose lifestyle bridges the yawning gulf between the foreign workers who staff the immaculate malls of luxury brands in which the elite citizens shop. My modest hotel room was affordable at European prices, but took a half-hour taxi ride for an exclusive drink at the world's first seven-star hotel, the Burj Al Arab. Here, I booked a slot to drink a $25 cocktail before wandering amongst the selfie takers in the lobby. Guests don't book rooms, they check into maisonettes. Nearby, a quiet upmarket bazaar offers a diluted slice of regional life without the exotic threat posed by the stories of the Arabian Nights, while the old town is an overwhelming neon-lit confusion of commerce. With relief, I sought refuge in a cafe down at the creek, which runs through the city centre, eating and drinking cheaply in the company of fellow tourists and weary-looking labourers. Joseph, my taxi driver home, was from Ethiopia. He described his 12-hour shifts without days off and his crowded shared lodgings on the edge of the city. Many like him work hard for little to keep the slick machinery of Dubai running. And many on the lower rungs find themselves trapped in a system from which it's hard to escape or flourish. Perhaps my most surreal visit was to Global Village, with Vegas-like pavilions representing all corners of the world. I spoke with Pete, an English musician who's one of many entertainers plying their trade in the park. With such work scarce at home, most are grateful for the opportunity. We attended a packed show where a troupe of British women exuberantly high-kicked and sang a selection of home classics before an Indian group served up a flirtatious dash of Bollywood. The shows were received with polite interest by the mixed audience, though I couldn't help noticing the physically muted reception beyond the odd stray tapping foot. Clear boundaries exist between the call and response of this imported exoticism. Pete explained how security steps in if anyone beyond the age of a toddler breaks into a dance. Dubai markets itself as the booming fun town of the Seven Emirates making up the UAE, but its laws frown upon public frivolity. This reminded me of the corny but well-loved film Footloose about the American town that outlawed dancing. How even for a work of fiction, I'd found it a ridiculous premise. A new labour law in 2022 now outlaws discrimination on the basis of difference and has improved the rights of workers. But displays of affection or drunken behaviour are still forbidden, and numerous foreigners have fallen foul of the law's often murky interpretation. Freedom of expression is severely curtailed, with the UAE currently ranked at 138th in the world. The public domain even extends to WhatsApp conversations, where swearing can lead to deportation, fines or prison. This may explain the positive agenda of its home press, which draws more on PR skills than hard-nosed journalism. The reports of Amnesty International paint a darker picture for those without money or influence. All around the world, headlines about immigration commonly stoke the passions of its readers. But you don't read about that in Dubai. Few complaints are heard from the 11% about being a minority in their own land. In fact, nobody's saying a word. For World Report, this is Gareth Mason from Dubai.
Well, that's it from World Report for today. The programme was edited by Elaine Devlin. If you want to listen back, you can go to rte.ie/World Report or wherever you get your podcasts. We're back again at the same time next week. Until then, for myself, Justin McCarthy, and all the team, thanks for listening and take care.